Hello, I'm Alice Gray and welcome back to another episode of Inside the Petri Dish, the podcast that dissects science and takes a look down the microscope at controversial topics within research. We're celebrating International Women's Day here at Inside the Petri Dish by showcasing amazing women in STEM, sharing their journeys into science and looking at their work. In this episode, we're joined by Melissa Christina Marquez, who researches sharks, a job that's incredibly enviable. She tells us about how she got into her field of research and about how women in science and deep sea sharks have more in common than we think. Welcome to Inside the Petri Dish for another episode for International Women's Day. We are honoured to be joined by Melissa Marquez. She is a Latina in STEM advocate, a marine biologist studying sharks of all things, and a podcast host as well as a TEDx speaker. So many strings to your bow, Melissa. Thank you so much for joining us.
No, it's my pleasure. Honestly, it's a true honour to be on this podcast, so thank you for having me.
So first things first, tell us a little bit about yourself and your research.
So I'm Melissa Christina Marquez. I come from Puerto Rico and grew up in Mexico before I moved to the United States. And it was there that I ended up studying marine biology and conservation for my undergraduate degree at New College of Florida in Sarasota, Florida. And then I moved to New Zealand to get my master's degree in marine biology, where I study deep sea sharks and chimeras. So chimeras are the relatives of sharks, and collectively sharks and their relatives are known as chondrichthyans. So that'll be the sharks, the skates, the rays, the stingrays, and the chimeras. And what I look at is habitat use. So answering why these animals, or where these animals go and why they're there, as well as the perception that people have of sharks, how that has changed over time, and what consequences that has for conservation initiatives.
That is just like a dream. That sounds amazing. You sound like...
It is quite a lot of fun.
It sounds like you need to have like a science cartoon show about you, because that just sounds so fantastic. Just sounds like a dream where I'm visioning you on a speedboat at all times.
I like that. I wish I was on a speedboat at all times, but a lot of it is a lot of data crunching in front of a computer. But when I do get out on the field, oh man, there's just nothing beats that.
Yeah, especially if you're in New Zealand or Australia, it's just the same thing wouldn't be true if you did it here in South Wales. It would just be raining.
Hey, you guys have some pretty interesting marine life up in Europe, so
yeah,
we can't knock it too much. But yeah, now I no longer live in New Zealand. I have just recently moved to Australia. So, very excited to go to Great Barrier Reef in Ningaloo, hopefully soon.
That sounds amazing. Well, if you ever want to come and look at the sharks in Wales, let me know and I'll give you a little tour of Wales.
Because oh my God, yes.
We've got some interesting stuff going on here. So what made you get into research with sharks then?
I've always just been really interested in them. My first love, I will say, was manatees. And I kind of feel like my parents wish I had stuck to that. And to be fair, I actually did get to do some research with manatees in Belize, which was a lot of fun. But yeah, just there's something about sharks that, to me, every time I see them, I'm just like, wow, talk about the epitome of a predator. Like, these guys have been around for such a long time. Evolution has really made some of them look pretty wacky. But one of my favorite facts about sharks is that we're discovering, on average, a new species every 2 weeks, and that blows my mind.
Yeah, that's amazing. Well, speaking of facts, you do a lot of this hashtag FinFacts on Twitter. I
yes.
always see them coming up. And it's a great way of engaging people with those facts. So tell us a little bit about why you started this and what you found has come out of it as a result, really.
Yeah. So I run a program called the Fins United Initiative, which is a education program that reaches out to educational institutions, basically kind of anybody who's interested in learning about these animals. And I started out with Finley Fridays, which was our mascot for a little bit, Finley the Great White Shark. And he was really cute. But as the program kind of matured a little bit, I don't want to say I got rid of Finley, but he plays more of a back part. And we still do Finley Friday Facts over on Facebook. But I realized that Twitter is such a great resource to get little tidbits of information and of knowledge. And granted, now it's gone up from the 120, 140, 180 characters. It's now like 200 something.
Yeah.
So there is a little bit more room to put more information in. But it's kind of, when you pair it with a nice picture, it grabs people's attention. If you can inject some knowledge into that little bit that you have that person's attention in, more for it. And so I've been doing where every like that the Finns United Initiative Facebook page gets, I'll translate that into a Finn fact. And I was trying to break 1,000 likes on the Facebook page before 2018 hit. And I did one final push of like, hey, if you can help us out, you know, spread the word or whatever. And I got so many likes that last day, which kind of made me feel happy because A, it meant people really wanted to follow and support my work. But also I was in the Sydney, Australia city waiting for the fireworks to happen, and I had staked out my place the whole entire day, so it actually gave me something to do. So yeah, I just kind of take advantage of it whenever I go anywhere. Like when I was moving to Australia, I told people, hey, I'm moving to Australia today. For every like and retweet, I'll do a fin fact, and I got hundreds of those. So it's almost like a fun way of getting people engaged and involved, and I think that's really important when it comes to these animals, because they're charismatic to me and to the people that study them, but it's really hard to call a shark cute when they have hundreds of sharp teeth. So they do have a bit of a PR problem, so I'm trying to combat that.
Oh my god, you're the PR person for sharks. That's amazing. I'm going to get you a badge made up with that on.
I'm going to put that as my byline on my CV.
Yeah, PR person for sharks.
Watch me, that is gonna happen.
Yeah, I mean, it's got to now. We've said it on a podcast.
It's
a law. I mean, as you say, Twitter and something like Facebook and social media is such a great platform to share science. And I think, personally, mainly because it's free and it makes science accessible. And one of my real passions is to open science to everyone, because science is often accessible to certain groups only, especially when you consider it historically.
Yeah.
And as someone from a working class background, a woman, you know, science wasn't particularly accessible to me. So something like Twitter or Facebook or social media, where everything is free, well, almost, it gives us a great opportunity to reach those who don't normally get to interact with science. And have you found that both kids and adults have been equally interested in this? Because a lot of the times when we think about engaging people with science, we think of kids, when actually adults are equally eager to find out what's going on.
Yeah, I mean, I have found both kids and adults are really interactive with my tweets. Mostly on Twitter, it's adults, and on Instagram, it's adults. On Facebook, it will be the parents of the children. And then, of course, I do Google Hangouts and Skype into classrooms. Actually, this time last week, I was Skyping into a classroom in India, and these kids were coming up with mind-blowing questions. I mean, it's one of those things where I'm a strong believer that kids are a lot more intelligent than we give them credit for. And a prime example is that I had one child in the classroom that I was Skyping in India ask me what the blood type of sharks was. And I'm sitting here like, holy crap, I've never even considered that. Like, that's just not something that I've ever thought to ask. And, you know, as me being a person, I don't want to say I'm an expert. I am not an expert, but someone who does have a lot of knowledge in it, it felt humbling to be like, look, this kid is thinking up of questions that, like, you know, experts don't even know. Because I asked on Twitter, I asked my network, like, hey, does anyone know the answer to this? And no one does. And it's things like this that makes me love my job, because I interact with so many people from so many different backgrounds, and you get questions like this, and it's like, this is why I do it. Because not only do they get to learn, but I get to learn as well.
Yeah, and I mean, I love science engagement, like, just because sometimes the things kids come out with, like, are, you know, the best questions ever, but also the funniest things, and they make my day. Like, like I was doing an engagement event about the brain, and I was asking them asking the kids what they think the brain runs on, and this kid goes, "My brain runs on pancakes."
Oh, gosh.
And it was the best thing I've ever heard in my life. And that every time I have pancakes, I'm like, brain power. This is some serious brain power here.
Yes, that gives me an opportunity of, like, veg out on my chocolate chip pancakes more.
Exactly. Just like, this is really good for my brain.
Exactly. My brain needs this.
So You mentioned it earlier, and I kind of want to delve into it a little bit, is that the perception of sharks has changed over, you know, the last few decades. I suppose something like the film Jaws wasn't great PR for sharks. Can you tell us a little bit about that and how this PR spin on sharks is working?
Yeah, so funnily enough, quite a lot of marine biologists who do study sharks say they got inspired by Jaws. And it was because they wanted to know more about this animal and, like, the actual animal, not the 20-foot animatronic thing. But for the large majority of it, a lot of people were affected by Jaws. They were suddenly confronted with this idea of a quote-unquote rogue shark, which by definition is a shark that has feasted upon humans and now has a taste for human blood and only goes after humans, which, for anyone listening, is not true. There's no evidence of a rogue shark ever, so no worries about that. But it did change the perception of sharks a lot, because they went from... I mean, people knew about sharks, but they weren't as much of a villain until Jaws happened. And it's funny because I actually read the book that Peter Benchley wrote after Jaws. And basically him saying that he regrets writing Jaws because it put sharks in such a bad light. And it really has, it got people scared. And so it's interesting to see how it's kind of shifted, because a lot of people continue to think, oh, you know, these are man-eating monsters, they're killing machines. Shark Week over in the United States for a while really wasn't helping, because all it did was show constant shows that just perpetrated this.
Like monster. Shark attack and stuff.
God, yeah, I mean, it's funny because I had been watching, when I moved to the States, it was 2000, and from 2000 to 2010, I could pick shows that they had literally been replaying since 2000, and they were the same campy ones of these shark bite survivors recalling events and having really, like, dramatized reenactments. And fair enough, you know, a shark bite is a really traumatic event, but showing over and over and over again, it's like, who is that really helping? And so it's been interesting to see in different parts of the world how people are coming to terms with having to share the ocean with sharks. Like here in Australia, they had a shark cull not too long ago after a series of fatal shark bites. And recently the government has been thinking about bringing in shark culls again, and the public is actually against it because they saw that it doesn't help. It does not help. I mean, most likely the shark that has bitten a surfer, a swimmer, or whoever, these are migratory animals, so they are most likely not in the area anymore once the shark hole comes into place. And when people were kind of realizing the science was showing, you know, this isn't helping anyone. In fact, it's killing a bunch of innocent animals. And then you've got bycatch, like dolphins, like sea turtles, like whales. People were realizing that it's not worth it. So it's very interesting to see how public perception has changed. Now, this isn't everywhere in the world. There are still some places that are quite scared of it, but that's what I'm trying to look into, is seeing how that continues to change. And hopefully, you know, with more of an emphasis of, you know, these animals are important, hopefully they'll one day shed the bad rap that they've been given.
Yeah, and I mean, it's that thing, isn't it, where we say, oh, it's shark-infested waters, when actually it's water, so it's going to have sharks in it. It's people going into water that's the problem.
That's my 2018, like, wish, is to no longer see the headline of shark-infested waters, because it makes me just want to send journalists, like, where do you expect them to be? Like,
yeah.
Are they supposed to be on land? Like, that is their habitat.
We can say, oh, it's a shark-infested bus if we start seeing buses with sharks on them, but we can't say...
Exactly.
Yeah. If you go to a beach where, in countries where sharks are, you know, is their habitat, you kind of have to expect that there might be one knocking around. And I know, because of people's fear of these sorts of things, that's not a great comfort for people, but it's, you are going into their habitat, it's something to bear in mind.
Yeah, and the reality of it is always a risk, but the risk is so low. If you look at the statistics, I mean, you have a better chance of getting hit in the head by a coconut, being run over by a cow, getting hit by lightning, getting smushed by a vending machine, than you do of ever having a shark bite or a shark encounter. And what a lot of people don't realize is that even when you are in the water, more often than not, because it is their habitat, there is most likely a shark around that, if you notice, isn't doing anything because we're not on the menu for them.
Because they've said that typically when some humans got bitten by a shark, it's been a test bite, but obviously because they're very teethy, it kind of is very damaging, or they get confused.
It is, it's called an exploratory bite, and if you think about it, it's kind of like if you see a plate of cookies on the kitchen table, and you can't tell if they're raisin cookies or if they're chocolate chip cookies because your contacts are out and you're kind of seeing something fuzzy, you take a tiny little test bite to see what it is. Now, more often than not, it ends up being a raisin cookie, and if you're like me, you spit it out. Problem is that these animals, their teeth, now, their teeth shape and the serrations and whatnot differ, but for great white sharks, their teeth are designed to go through blubber, through bone, through meat. Think about how easily our skin gets damaged, how easily we bruise, how we can bleed profusely from a paper cut. And, you know, their teeth can easily go through us. So it's not them being like, oh, this looks kind of yummy, let me just, you know, hack their arm off or something like that. No, it's genuinely, I mean, they have no other way of figuring out what we are besides giving us an exploratory bite. Now, the sad thing is yes, it's not them doing this on purpose. It's not that rogue shark theory that a lot of people like to say.
So, you were mentioned on an episode of Bill Nye Science Guy. How did that feel? That must have been amazing.
Well, it was really funny because Dalton Ludwig sent me and Danny Raviotti a Twitter message saying, hey, Bill mentions us, like, in the first episode or something along those lines. And me and my husband were eating at a restaurant, and I, like, almost, like, dropped my phone being like, no. Josh was like, what? And I'm like, Bill Nye apparently name drops me and my friends. And he's like, holy crap. And he's like, no, we're not even waiting to go home. And, like, pulls up his phone and pulls up Netflix. And so we're going through the episode trying to find it. And then sure enough, towards the end, he says it. And I let out this, like, mini squeal hybrid, pterodactyl noise. And people in the restaurant were kind of looking at us like, what is going on with it? Like, these people, are they nuts? And it was so surreal. And still to this day, it's so surreal because, you know, that was such a joint effort. And to be honest, I don't feel like I really did much. I just inspired the conversation. And, you know, Dalton did the hashtag and Danny was the first one to introduce herself to Bill. And so it was just really cool because I grew up watching Bill Nye episodes in school and in science classes. And so for him to say my name, I'm just like, yeah, 14-year-old Melissa would not believe me.
So this was linked, for the people at home, this was linked to a Twitter sort of, not a campaign, but just an awareness thing that a lot of scientists got involved in, where we were trying to get Bill Nye, who is a very big science communicator, typically from America, but a lot of people get to see his work now, because in the UK we didn't get it until we were a lot older, trying to introduce him to us, because that there's well, I mean, still there's such a small, narrow representation of people in science communication. It's typically white males. So it was a really cool thing to get involved in, where we just tweeted him with a hashtag, and it must have got millions of responses. And poor Bill Nye must have had so many notifications from it.
Oh yeah, it had 1.8 million impressions in the first week alone, the hashtag. And I mean, I'm sitting here because how it started was I was a moderator for the Twitter handle BioTweeps, and it was my week. And it was like one of the last days that we were talking about science communication. And I posed the question of, are science communicators or science celebrities like Bill Nye and Neil deGrasse Tyson, are they helping science communication or are they hurting? Because for a lot of these scientists that are up there, they sometimes like to answer questions that isn't in their field, like in their specialty. And it's like, you know, there's nothing wrong with kind of saying, well, that's not my field of expertise, but let me pass you on to a scientist that does know and pass the microphone over. And so we were talking about that, and that's when Dalton came up with the hashtag Twitter, Bill Meets Science Twitter, in a way for Bill to interact more with the science Twitter community. And I mean, props to Bill for not ignoring it and actually talking back to us and using the hashtag Twitter, saying, you know, I see you. And he said something really funny, which I can't quote right now. It's like, you're the wind beneath my like aerodynamic wings or something like that. But it was really cool for him to, you know, acknowledge that. And then now it's part of a segment of his show. And, you know, that's just the science communication done right, both on us being able to use that platform, but also Bill seeing it, recognizing it, and using his very, very popular platform to bring these scientists up and shine a spotlight on them that otherwise wouldn't. So yeah, it's definitely a very proud moment right there.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's fantastic that you sparked something that hopefully will increase representation of scientists within the media from different backgrounds, different ethnicities, different genders, you know, different races, just everything, because that's the problem. Because at the moment there's such a narrow representation on television of what scientists look like. Kids look at the TV, watch the TV and think, you know, they might not identify with them because all they see is a typical scientist. I mean, 70% of the world, when you ask them what do you think a scientist look like, they think of a man. By continually asking the same people to answer questions about science on TV, whether it's their field or not, you still seem to see the same cookie cutter person. And by encouraging and getting him to feature more scientists on the show, kids, adults watching this will see that there's more than just, you know, they'll stop just thinking of a man and thinking of a white man, probably with glasses and crazy hair, every time they think of a scientist. And it's fantastic. And so, well done. I can't say enough how amazing it is about how something small, like a hashtag, can have such huge ramifications, and hopefully will start some form of downstream effects where more kids see themselves being scientists and getting involved in science. It's amazing. And so on to another thing that you have done. You did a TED talk, and it talks about how female researchers are like deep sea sharks, lurking in the darkness. We're there, but no one's paying attention. So can you tell us why sharks and female scientists are more alike than we originally think?
Yeah, so you're right. That was my TED talk back in June of this past year. And basically, it's talking about how on a lot of nature shows, regardless of whether the narrator sees if a shark has claspers or not, and claspers are the telltale sign of whether a shark is a male or a female. And basically, they're, to put it bluntly, they're the shark's penis. But it has two of them because they have two fins down there. And so a lot of times you'll see these sharks flying through the air, and you'll hear the narrator be like, oh my God, look at him, he's so big. Or you'll hear the scientists be like, oh, look at him, he's such a big boy, and stuff like that. And it's funny because usually the big boys are actually big girls, because female sharks are usually bigger than the males. And so I went into the talk doing parallels between female scientists and female sharks. Like female sharks, some of them have actually adapted in which certain parts of their skin and their body is actually thicker. So when a male shark bites down to hold the shark still during mating, it doesn't hurt the female as much. And it's kind of like how female scientists have had to adapt to having thick skin as well, with the amount of sexism and almost cruelty sometimes you get in this industry. And so just going back and forth about the different aspects of what makes a female shark really cool, and obviously the female researchers studying them really cool as well, because one of the things that Shark Week is still lacking is not only diversity in sharks, because we always see the famous ones of great white sharks, hammerheads, tiger sharks, bull sharks, and fair enough, they're really cool, but there are over like 500 different other species that you can also show that are just as cool. And so it's diversity of sharks that they're lacking in, but also the diversity of scientists. They usually have the same scientists on these shows, which is fair enough. You know, the scientists that are on there are doing amazing work. But there's also a lot of really cool female scientists doing work, and it kind of saddens me that they're not highlighting the work that they're doing, because, you know, that's something that I wish I had seen on Shark Week when I was 7 years old, is a female shark scientist and being like, oh, look, if she can do it, heck yeah, I can do it. Instead, my science classes were mostly filled with guys, and I was the only girl, and it got lonely. And so I definitely think if how the world is going is more inclusion and diversity, hopefully that includes for Shark Week as well. So it'll be interesting to see what Shark Week 2018 holds. Shark Week 2017 was definitely a step in the right direction, so I have hope. So Discovery, please don't let me down.
Well, maybe we'll see you on Shark Week soon. That would be great.
Oh, that'll be fun.
Yeah, and I want to see you on a speedboat as well.
Yes, so I'll be like, Alice, this is for you.
And you've got your PR badge on.
Exactly, I'll have my PR badge.
Oh, thank you so much for joining me on Inside the Petri Dish for International Women's Day. It's such an honour to have you on and celebrate what you do, and hear about how you got into the research you do has been so interesting and hopefully really inspiring to our listeners. So thank you so much for taking the time to be a part of our celebrations for International Women's Day.
Again, thank you for having me. The honour's all mine.
It was a great pleasure to have Melissa on Inside the Petri Dish. She's doing amazing things for science as well as science communication. It's great to hear how passionate she is about her science, as well as how the public perceives sharks. Stay tuned for the next episode of Inside the Petri Dish. Please go rate and subscribe to our podcast, as this helps other people find us. And until next time, see you later.